Today, we're going to get an overview on Senate File 2521, which is this year's version, both the Senate and the House version of a transportation funding bill. We have, it looks like about 15 or 20 people that want to talk either in support or hopefully in support. We'll see when they all get to the table. But before we get going here, I just want to say, Abraham Lincoln was born about 199 years ago, and he said, "You cannot escape the responsibility of tomorrow by evading it today." And I think those are pretty profound words for what we are going to do today. We can't escape the responsibility that we have to the next generation and the generation after that to make sure that they've got a safe transportation system to travel on and that there's jobs to be had. And somebody's even holding up a sign saying that in the back. Senate File 2521, we're going to have Ms. Berezovsky go through it piece by piece so everyone can understand. Folks, you need to know that what is in the bill today, there's a few parts of it that are going to change. There's some governance structure for the half-cent sales tax in the metropolitan area that is still up for discussion. It's my understanding that the Met Council and some of the county commissioners have been working with Senator Dibble, and it appears that they have an amendment that will be offered up Thursday to take all the heartburn of those groups out of it. There's a couple other small amendments that will have to happen to the bill on Thursday. And I'm sure that other members will bring more amendments, but let's get to the crux of the bill and let Ms. Berezovsky have a go at it. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and members, you should have in your packets a summary of Senate File 2521 and also the bill itself, the Senate File 2521. And I will start with Article 1, which is transportation appropriations. The first thing to note is that these are all appropriations that are over and above the appropriations made in last year's enacted transportation funding bill and also in the special session bill. So mostly what Article 1 does is to appropriate the new revenues that are raised in this bill out to the different agencies and budget activities. There are a few riders that I'll mention as well. On page 3, there is $500,000 from the general fund for port development assistance and $200,000 for a grant to the Humphrey Institute for its participation in the Urban Partnership Program. Then appropriations for local roads. The Met Council appropriation on page 5 for $7.7 million is for operations of the Hiawatha Light Rail Transit Line. And one rider to note is it begins on 5.33 that says that the Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority may not pay any portion of Hiawatha Light Rail Transit Line operating costs for fiscal 09. Page 6, appropriation for public safety, and there are two appropriations I'll mention. One is for State Patrol patrolling highways, and this is for the cost of adding 40 State Patrol troopers. And it reflects a move toward the goal of raising the State Patrol trooper complement to 600. $1.5 million is appropriated for capital security. And then on the bottom of page 6, top of page 7, are appropriations $55 million for fiscal 08 and $77 million for fiscal 09, which is the needed appropriations for the I-35W bridge collapse for MnDOT to have its additional spending authority. Section 7 on page 7 is a value capture study, an appropriation of $325,000 to the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Minnesota to complete a study and present a report and also workshops for public officials to discuss and consider the public policy implications of financing new transportation infrastructure by capturing the increased value of property surrounding those infrastructure improvements. Article 2, which begins at the bottom of page 7, it begins with Section 1, which is a debt service surcharge. And this is an amount of money that is calculated annually to defray the cost of debt service on the trunk highway bonding that is authorized in this article. And it's added on top of the gas tax. And it has a ceiling of 2.5 cents, so it can never float above 2.5 cents. And after the debt service is paid, it will float back down again. Section 2 is trunk highway bond appropriations. And this is as it goes on in detail, $2.262 billion over 10 years. The largest element in that appropriation is for state road construction. And as you can see on page 9, the beginning on line 11, in fiscal 09, there's $417 million of that appropriation is available for spending. And then the next year is $500 million, and then after that it's $150 million each year for the next 8 years. Of the 09 amount, $40 million is for trunk highway interchanges, and that is to be spent equally between the department's metropolitan district of 8 counties and 50% to districts in greater Minnesota. $300 million in each of the first 2 years for a total of $600 million is for trunk highway bridges, and that is to fund the Trunk Highway Bridge Improvement Program, which is explained in more detail later in the bill. The program delivery on 10.6 is capped at 20% of the full appropriation. And Subdivision 3, Great River Road, there is a $4.3 million bond appropriation for historic roadside properties on Great River Road. 10.14, Subdivision 4, is part of the funds that are needed to match the federal money for the Urban Partnership Agreement. Then there are appropriations for the Mankato District Headquarters Building, Chaska, Carver County Partnership Truck Station, Rochester and Maple Grove Truck Stations. And then on page 11, line 9, there's local bridge replacement and rehabilitation. And this is State Transportation Fund General Obligation Bond appropriation of $50 million for local bridges. Page 12, the Local Road Improvement Program, there is an appropriation of $10 million of general obligation bonding for the Local Road Improvement Program, and that is for safety capital improvement projects on county state aid highways outside of the metro area. Section 4, page 12, line 12, there is an appropriation of $400,000 to the Met Council for its share in the Urban Partnership Agreement. And then transportation building exterior repair, $18 million to the Department of Administration. And that is funded by bonding and bond sale expenses. Then on page 13 is the total bond sale authorization. Trunk highway fund bonds are $2.2 billion. And state transportation fund bonds are $60 million. Article 3, highway user taxes. Section 1, and we start out with the vehicle registration tax changes, and this is very similar to what was in House File 946 last year, the vetoed transportation bill. Section 1 is the depreciation schedule for vehicle for tax purposes, and it is slightly changed from last year. The current bill, you can see on 14.30, it goes 100, then 90%, 80%, 70, 60, and so on down. And then on page 15, you see the language that currently imposes caps on vehicle registration taxes is stricken from the law. Page 15, section 2 is the lower income motor fuels tax credit. And this is a credit for taxpayers in the lowest income tax bracket, $25 annual credit per taxpayer. And let's see, this is for individuals whose taxable net income falls within the lowest tax bracket. And that takes effect for taxable year 09. The credit would be payable for the first time in 2010. Section 3 on page 16, I think it's easier to look at 3 and 4 together because it looks kind of like they're backwards, but there is first a 2 cent per gallon gasoline tax that takes effect within a month after enactment. And then in Section 3, it goes up 3 more cents to 25 cents per gallon, and that's effective on September 15, 2008. And there's a mistake in the summary. I wrote September 1st, but it is September 15th that the full nickel takes effect. And then Sections 5 and 6 are similar phased-in special fuel tax increases. Section 7 on page 17 is the indexing provision, and this provision increases the gasoline tax and fuel taxes each year beginning in beginning on July 1, 2010, and it's the gasoline tax is increased according to the CPIU. Section 8 on page 18, this was part of last year's vetoed bill, House File 946, and that increases from 3% to 5% the fee that is imposed on leases or short-term leases of vehicles. Section 9 is the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue provision. What this bill will do is to phase in the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenues to be fully dedicated after beginning in 2012, after the phase-in, to first paying the income tax credit, and then the revenues that are left after that tax credit is funded will be divided 50% to Greater Minnesota Transit, 25% to Metro Transit, and then 17.25% to county state aid highways and 7.75% to municipal state aid streets. Article 4 is local option taxes, and this is the Metropolitan Transportation Area sales tax and also a local option transportation tax in this article. Section 1 defines terms. It defines the metropolitan transportation area as those counties within the metro that are participating in the metropolitan sales tax, as well as adjacent counties that opt in. The minimum guarantee county is any metropolitan county that is participating in the joint powers agreement, but that raises 3% or less of the total sales tax raised in the metropolitan transportation area. On line 17, on page 19, there is a provision for imposition of the tax. The Metropolitan Council shall impose the tax of 0.5% in all the metropolitan counties and all adjacent counties who opt in, as well as an excise tax of $20 per motor vehicle. Per motor vehicle sale. And then on line 23, you see that after June 30, 2028, the sales tax is decreased to 0.25%. On line 25, there it provides for a joint powers agreement. For at least four metropolitan area counties must opt into this agreement by resolution of their county boards. And when at least four opt in, then they form an agreement as to how to administer the sales tax. It provides a process that allows counties to join the board later. It may provide for withdrawal of participating counties, and it may provide for a weighted voting system to make joint power decisions. The joint powers board will consist of a representative, at least one representative of each participating county. And there on page 20, line 3, the amount of revenue that can be used by the board for its administrative expenses is capped. And on line 7, the Joint Powers Board is authorized to establish an advisory group to give technical advice in grant consideration and awards. On line 11, the grant application and awards process is set forth. A GEARS committee is set up to evaluate grant applications and also to establish the procedure for award of grants. Grants may be paid only to the state and political subdivisions. There have to be objective criteria for grant awards, and any grants must be consistent with the most recent version of the Met Council's transportation policy plan. The membership of the GEARS committee is set forth beginning on line 25 on page 20, and the committee will then evaluate grant applications and make a list in priority ranking, which is given to the joint powers, who will make the final decision as to grant awards. On page 21, lines 9 to 11, it provides that in fiscal 09, of the initial revenue collected, at least $23 million must be allocated to the Metropolitan Council for Transit Assistance. An allocation of grant awards, there is a percentage allocation. At least 50% must be for transit, and that can be for capital or operations. At least 25% must be for trunk highways or local roads of regional significance. And then the remaining 25% can be dedicated for any of those purposes. And up to 5% of that can go for pedestrian programs, bicycle programs, and pathways. The minimum guarantee counties, which are the ones who raise 3% or less of the total sales tax, are guaranteed to receive grant awards that will at least pay them back for the amount of sales tax that they have raised. Subdivision 7 at the bottom of page 21 authorizes the Joint Powers Board to issue bonds to fund grants and to refund bonds that have been issued. I think I missed one key point here somehow in my going through this, and that is that four counties in the metropolitan area have to sign on to the joint powers agreement. Once the four counties sign on, all seven then become part of the taxing district where the sales tax is imposed. The effective date on page 23 of this metropolitan area sales tax, the bottom line is that if the joint powers board is not formed and a joint powers agreement is not entered into by July 1, this section expires. Okay, on page 23, section 2 is the Greater Minnesota Transportation Sales and Use Tax. I believe this is the same as the provision in last year's vetoed bill that gives communities in Greater Minnesota the opportunity to impose a transportation sales tax of 0.5%, $20 excise tax per vehicle sale. And it has to be voted on by referendum, and it has to be for a specific transportation improvement, and then the tax terminates after the specific improvement has been constructed or achieved. Article 5 beginning on page 24, County State Aid Highway Fund Distribution. And this is very, very similar to what was in the vetoed bill last year. It provides for the main difference is that the new money that's raised on the gas tax and on the vehicle registration tax and on the MVEST is apportioned differently from the formula that applies now. And the new formula is 40% for motor vehicle registrations and 60% for money needs. Page 29, Article 6. Section 2 prohibits a road authority or a private road operator from tolling an existing highway, and it prohibits them from requiring commercial motor vehicles to utilize toll facilities. Toll facilities or HOV lanes that are in use or were in use before September of 07 are exempt from this, as well as are any expansions of road and bridge capacity. Those can be tolled. Section 3 prohibits road and bridge privatization for toll purposes. Section 4 is very similar to the provision in last year's bill. It redistributes the 5% of the highway user fund that the legislature is able to redistribute no more frequently than every 6 years. And the money is dedicated to a flexible fund. The Commissioner of Transportation can determine among the three allowable uses how much of the money from the 5% goes into those funds. One is for turnbacks, one is for highway safety improvements, and one is for routes of regional significance. And the new piece says that the commissioner, insofar as is practicable, must divide the money equally between the Metro District and Greater Minnesota. This provision takes effect July 1, 09. Then Section 5 is the Trunk Highway Bridge Improvement Program, which is funded at least initially by the $300 million in each of the first 2 years of the bonding authorization. This program, first of all, directs the Commissioner of Transportation to develop a program to accelerate repair and replacement of trunk highway bridges. The Commissioner must come forward with an inventory of trunk highway bridges that are fracture critical, structurally deficient, or are priority projects for other reasons. The commissioner must classify all of those bridges in the inventory into one of three tiers. Tier 1 has an average daily traffic count of over 1,000 and a sufficiency rating at or below 50, or is otherwise identified as a priority project for other reasons. Tier 2 is fracture critical or has a sufficiency rating at or below 80. And Tier 3 is any other bridge in the program identified by the commissioner that's not Tier 1 or Tier 2. And unless the commissioner can come forward with a justification, all repair and replacement costs of bridges in the highest tier must be funded first before going down to the next tier and the next tier. Every 6 years, the commissioner will have to report to the legislature concerning prioritization of bridge projects, a progress report on the program, and a projection of future work and annual needs. And finally, the commissioner will have to submit an annual report to the Legislative Transportation Finance Committees concerning that inventory report with analysis and recommendations for possible changes. Section 6 was in last year's vetoed bill. This is on another subject. It allows a person who would qualify for public defender assistance who's had a license revoked because of DWI offenses to pay the total surcharge and reinstatement fee in two payments. Then, Section 7, this is related somewhat to the Metropolitan Council appropriation that I mentioned earlier. It limits a county regional railroad authority's contribution to transit capital to 10%, and it prohibits a regional rail authority from contributing costs of transit operation and maintenance. And if a railroad authority is currently contributing to operation and maintenance, it may continue to do so until January 1, 2009. And finally, Section 8 requires the Metropolitan Council to negotiate with the Federal Transit Administration for funding of a rail transitway system as a single comprehensive development. And that would include Rush Line, Red Rock, Southwest Transitway, and North Star Commuter Rail to St. Cloud.
Thank you, Ms. Berzowski. Well, at this time, we'll take some testimony. We'll go right down the list as I have it in front of me. So Mr. Vanasek, Ms. Donahoe, and Ms. Munyon, if you three would want to come to the – we'll try to work in groups of three if possible. Make sure that you say your name clearly for the record and sign in, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Vanasek, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Inter-County Association, which is a 13-member organization consisting of five counties in the Twin Cities metro area and eight counties in greater Minnesota. As the Minnesota legislature convenes for the 2008 session, transportation funding once again looms as a critical issue that needs to be addressed. The list of folks clamoring for relief from congestion, dangerous two-lane roads, and inadequate transit service is growing and now includes the business community, county, city, and township governments, labor unions, shippers, farm groups, people who depend on transit, and just about everybody else who have wasted time and money being stuck in traffic. We are approximately 2 months shy of the 20th anniversary of the last time Minnesota made its last significant, sustained investment in transportation infrastructure. Unchanged since 1988, the gas tax has seen its buying power diminish significantly due to the effects of inflation. The problem is exacerbated by the large debt service burden on the Trunk Highway Fund as a result of past bonding programs. All across Minnesota, property taxes are being increased in order to help partially offset the failure to enact a comprehensive funding package at the state level. Last week, the Mankato Free Press editorial board wrote that the road funding debate in Minnesota isn't about raising taxes. It's about creating a sensible system where the right people are paying the right taxes. The paper goes on to say that the current transportation policies have forced more and more of the costs for state roads onto county and city taxpayers. In Blue Earth County alone, property taxpayers are paying several times more for state aid highways as they did as recently as 5 years ago. We all know that something needs to be done, and it needs to be done this session. With skyrocketing costs and right-of-way acquisition, materials, and other construction costs, every year we delay enactment results in tens of millions of dollars in additional costs. MnDOT's own 2006 congestion report illustrates this reality. When significant projects are adequately funded, they can be completed faster, cheaper, and better. The public is rapidly losing patience with government that doesn't get the basic work of government done. Building and maintaining a safe, efficient, and effective 21st century transportation system is one of the most basic vital services that you are duty-bound to provide. Please act favorably on the legislation that is before you. One last thing I'd like to add. I did notice when you went through the summary of the bill that the wheelage tax option for counties has been removed. It was in last year and prior year's bills. We're disappointed in that, but we also understand that that was a provision that was opposed by some business groups, including the State Chamber of Commerce, and we understand there comes a time when some compromises have to be made. So we are disappointed that that piece is not in here, but the rest of the package is still worthy of support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vanasek. Ms. Donahoe.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. The Alliance is a statewide coalition representing transportation businesses, local government, labor unions, transit systems, and other transportation advocacy groups. On behalf of the members of the Alliance, I would like to express our support for Senate File 2521. While our members believe that the documented unmet need for highways and transit of $1.8 billion per year for the next decade does require a funding plan that would meet a higher percentage of that need than this bill, we understand that this is a compromise plan, and our members are strongly committed to supporting legislation that is moving through the process and that has a chance to become law this session. Back in 1995, a lot of our members were involved in a campaign to increase the state gas tax by 5 cents per gallon. It was kind of dubbed the 5 and 95 campaign. And, of course, today, 13 years later, a lot of our members are amazed that the legislature is still debating raising the gas tax by 5 cents a gallon. In order to get the gas tax back to the purchasing power that it had back in 1988, the state would need to increase the tax by 16 cents per gallon. Continuing to deal with our transportation system by taking a piecemeal approach and applying Band-Aids when there are crises and dealing with only the most glaring problems, our members do not think is an adequate response. The growing problems on our transportation system are impacting more and more areas of our society. And it seems that every year, the Alliance is working with more and more organizations who have found that their members are impacted by transportation, from agricultural groups like turkey growers, wheat growers, the Farmers Union, to the State Troopers Association, to environmental groups like the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, the Will Steger Foundation, to faith-based groups like Isaiah and the League of Women Voters, to even healthcare groups like the Brain Injury Association, whose members understand that we need better transit choices, we need a better transportation system in Minnesota. The current system is simply not meeting people's needs. People in Minnesota, we have found all across the state, understand that the lack of action is costing all of us real money as construction costs increase and as other states do a better job of competing for federal transportation dollars. Action is needed this session. We know that a million more people are moving into our state in the next 15 to 20 years, and they're going to generate an additional 4 million trips every day. And if the state doesn't take action now to plan for that future, the system will only get worse. But we believe that this legislation will begin to make a difference, and we strongly encourage you to vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. Ms. Munyon.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sherry Munyon, and I'm representing the Minnesota Public Transit Association. We want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and we are pleased with the bill that's in front of us. Although it isn't everything we wanted and hoped for, this is a really good start. It will finally advance and make significant progress for the transit projects that we've yearned for. It will help the urban areas, the suburban areas, and transit service in greater Minnesota as well. Seeing the vision implemented is something we've worked for a long time. The needs have grown dramatically since that time without the investment, and now we'll be able to see that come to fruition. We'll be able to give commuters in the metropolitan area an alternative to riding in the car. We'll be able to see an improvement in our air quality in Minnesota. And we'll be able to start to fulfill the lack of service in greater Minnesota counties and finally make some inroads to those regions that have no countywide service at all today. The past lack of funding has also created an inability for MnDOT to fund its local or state share for local transit providers in greater Minnesota. And that has been a growing burden not only to those providers but in turn to their citizens, because those local communities have gone and had to rely on property taxes to help keep their systems afloat as well. Again, although this bill doesn't have everything we wanted, it's a significant start, and we would encourage you to support it. We like the fact that it's a multimodal bill because our buses like to ride on safe roads and bridges, so we urge your support.
Thank you, Ms. Munyon. Questions from the committee? Then we'll thank you very much. We'll move along to the next three. We have Mr. Werke, Mr. Carlson, and Ms. Blyle. Mr. Worker, we've got somebody coming to get the handouts. Thank you. Mr. Worker.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name for the record is Tim Worker. I'm the Highway and Transportation Division Director for the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. The Associated General Contractors of Minnesota is a trade association that represents the some 450 highway construction and general building contractors in the state. We're the oldest and largest chapter of AGC.
Thank you.
In the country. Mr. Chairman, my remarks, I'm going to be brief. I'm going to cover two items this afternoon. One concerning the capacity of the industry to perform additional work in the market as it relates to this bill, and also as it relates to the state's economic health in general. And number two, I'd like to just briefly touch on some trends that inflation has brought to the market and what we see in terms of prices and pricing that is going on. AGC of Minnesota, we annually conduct a survey of our members as to what they see in the market and what they see the trends as, and we have done so this year as well. And I'm going to briefly summarize the results of that survey, which is coming around to you right now in a statement. Over 50% of the respondents in our survey project a decreased volume of work for 2008. While the full economic impact of these projections would be hard to estimate, it is clear that sales and construction industry employment will decline, as will sales and employment in related businesses such as design, engineering, insurance, bonding, and equipment, and material suppliers. The AGC survey shows the industry has significant capacity to perform construction work of all types throughout Minnesota during the next several years. Representing approximately 10% of the state's economy, the construction industry is a vital economic engine that touches the lives, our lives in many ways each day, providing an enhanced lifestyle and significant economic stimulus to Minnesota communities. If the Minnesota construction market does not expand, many Minnesota contractors and related businesses and their employees will be faced with difficult decisions regarding their futures. Contractors need to have some idea of what the future holds to plan for staffing, banking, insurance, equipment, technology upgrades, etc. And without some idea of what their future holds, some firms will shift their focus to other markets within the region or beyond. Others will elect to enter other industries where skills and resources transfer, and sadly, some firms will close their doors. One of the greatest threats we face in this declining market is the loss of trained, skilled workers who may choose to move to another location or change industries and not return. At a time when skilled labor is at a premium, the loss of trained, skilled construction labor to other states or industries would be an immeasurable economic loss to the Minnesota economy. We must take steps to preserve and enhance our skilled construction industry workforce. And investing in infrastructure now will provide for jobs where our skilled workers can build projects with Minnesota quality. By delaying this investment, we will miss the economic opportunity and pass the cost of waiting on to the taxpayers. Again, I want to stress the fact that within this market, our members identify that they have significant additional capacity to provide for the construction of the jobs that, or the projects that will be provided in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Werke, and that's pretty clearly demonstrated on page 7 of your handout, where you have only 4% of your respondents are basically saying that they're at capacity. That means 96%. Basically, the construction industry here in Minnesota is wide open.
Mr. Chairman, that would be correct. I chose not to go through the handout in the interest of time.
Right.
I have one more piece to hit on, if that. Lastly, I wanted to draw your attention to the one-page double-sided handout and touch for a moment upon the impact that inflation is having in the market. And these statistics come from AGC of America, but I believe also apply to this market as well. And there are two highlighted provisions on the front of that page. And what you'll see in the statement is that since over four years.
Just a second, Mr. Worthy.
I think that may be still laying on the table.
Still laying here.
Okay. We'll get somebody to pass that out.
While they're passing it out, if I can just summarize. In 2007, the Highway Construction Producer Price Index, which is the economic index that is used in the construction marketplace and provides information for construction inputs, that index in 2007 rose 9.6%. And 47% over 4 years. The CPI, which we are all familiar with, that we are all used to, the consumer price index for durable goods in the market, rose on the same time frame for 2007, 4.1%, and over those same 4 years, only 14%. So what we're seeing is a tremendous spike in the construction market. Due largely to, on the back page, you can see the inputs to construction in a very busy spreadsheet application. But under Table 3, changes in producer price index for specific construction inputs, number two, diesel fuel, if you follow that column over about one-third of the way down the page, since 2003, number two diesel fuel has increased 177% in the market. Diesel fuel is a principal input in construction activity, everything from asphalt oil to the fuel that powers heavy construction equipment. In between diesel fuel and other precious metals in the market, steel, copper, nickel, other things, that's what's leading to this runaway inflation that we're seeing. My point here in all of this being that it's time to get about the business of making this investment. As you can see, if we don't make that investment today, it's going to cost us several times over every year that we wait. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Werke. Mr. Sy, do you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Elliot Side. I'm the executive director of AFSCME Council 5. We represent 43,000 public workers in 87 counties of the state. Here today with my friend and colleague and brother, Dick Anfang, who heads the Minnesota Building Trades. And together we represent over 100,000 working men and women in this state. I represent additionally 2,600 people who work in the State Department of Transportation, Mr. Chairman and members. This bill needs to be passed this session. It's needed to be passed for the last couple of sessions. It funds roads and transit. It deals with Metro and Greater Minnesota, and it keeps Minnesota moving in a safe way. We have testified over the last few years over and over again in the House and the Senate here about the threat to the Minnesota roadways, a threat to public safety. We have pointed out on numerous occasions in PowerPoints and other ways the broken bridges, the bridges that are critically fractured, the bridges that are rotting underneath, the bridges that have not seen the kind of inspection that they've needed. We've pointed out the roads that are undercapitalized and underdone, and the maintenance that's being done with less people doing more and more roads, more and more bridges, much to the chagrin of the motoring public. This proposal is a down payment. It's an investment for the future. It doesn't mortgage the future away. It pays as we go. Frankly, it's down payment. We could use more. But this at least gets us started. The governor's proposal on borrowing to do bridges and roads not only will increase local government property taxes and the burden on local government property taxes, because local governments will have to put up money to get part of that done, but in fact we'll have interest costs of nearly over 900 million by our estimates over the next few years to pay for this. This is not a way to fund this type of investment. We ought to be paying for it as we go. We have not seen a gas tax increase in this state since 1988. Roads, bridges, and transit can't live on $1988 any better than any of us can, any better than any citizen can. It's time we stopped partisanship on this or ideology. It's time we put our money into investment in Minnesota, into the people of this state. The idea here is to keep Minnesota moving. This is not only a bill that will produce safer bridges and safer roads. It's a bill that will produce an investment in the transportation industry and produce more jobs. It's a bill that will make us economically competitive, not a flyover state, as Rudy Perpich used to say. Because we have to have a good transportation infrastructure if we're going to move our goods to market. It's neither pro-labor nor pro-business. It's both pro-labor and pro-business as a bill. It produces a vibrant and economy that can sustain jobs, good-paying jobs, good-benefited jobs for the people of this state. If they're my members who work in transportation, if they're people who have to get to work every day, if they're people who are building and maintaining those roads. So we think this is long past due. We hope that you pass this in the next couple of days, send it to the governor. We hope that the governor has an epiphany and decides to sign this bill and keep Minnesota moving. And if not, then it's time for the legislature of this state to take leadership and pass this bill, either by getting the governor to sign it or overriding a veto. This bill is desperately needed by this state. We are in a transportation crisis in this state. And if we're going to improve and move forward and not be a flyover state, then it's got to be passed. One last thing, and I'll turn it over to my friend Dick Anfang. 25 years ago, Governor Rudy Perpich was in a war of words with Governor Janklow from South Dakota. I'm old enough to remember that. I'm probably older than some people around the room. And they were in a war of words about the economy in this state in South Dakota and who is going to produce the most jobs. And the governor of South Dakota kept saying, well, he's attracting jobs away. Well, I would tell you they kept depopulating. We kept growing. But he kept saying, well, they're going to take jobs from here to there. Governor Perpich went down to southwestern Minnesota. I know Senator Langseth remembers that. Went down to southwestern Minnesota, went down the border at I-90 in Sioux Falls, and looked at the road on the Minnesota side and said, this is why we keep business coming to Minnesota and we'll keep business going. Look at the condition of our roadways. And the road was clear and clean. The shoulders were crisp. You couldn't drive on a better road. And then he walked across the South Dakota border, and he looked at the road in South Dakota and was pothole filled. The shoulders were ruined. And he said, this is why Minnesota will keep business more in South Dakota. Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, go back down there right now. The road is pitted on the Minnesota side. The shoulders are ruined, and the South Dakota side is looking clean and neat. And anyone from southwestern Minnesota can tell you that. It's time to upgrade our transportation infrastructure. It cannot wait till tomorrow. It needs to be done today.
Thank you, Mr. Seid. Mr. Anfang.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dick Anfang. And the privilege of being the president of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. We and our unions represent the workers that are waiting eagerly to get back to work to realize in their jobs and in their incomes the after effects of passing this bill. The attitude over the last number of years in a couple of administrations has, in my mind, been one of disinvestment, thinking that somehow that will pay off. Clearly, that has not worked. We need to take the opportunity, and I'm not going to dwell on it a whole lot, but to reinvest, to invest in the transportation system, invest in a way that will create jobs. In the building trades and the labor movement, as we have prepared for this legislative session, our agenda has broken down to three things: jobs, jobs, and jobs. I commend you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for hearing this on day one, for showing the public and us that you're sincere and you know that jobs are needed in this state, well, good-paying jobs. I can tell you honestly that the unemployment, as Mr. Werke has indicated through his contractor report, that the unemployment is probably twice what the state's average is, and the underemployment is very significant. By underemployment, I mean construction workers that whose employers can only provide 4 days a week or 3 days a week in order to spread out the amount of work that they have to keep, in an effort to keep the employees that they have employed. And unfortunately, they even at that point, they have to lay people off at an alarming rate. Unemployment in the construction industry is equals right now with what it was in the early 80s, and we don't want to live through that again. We're doing it right now. So I won't take any more time other than, again, thank you. I hope you can expeditiously get this to where it needs to go. We all know where it needs to go. And get this appropriated. The more I talk, the longer it takes for you to get to work, the longer it takes to get to the governor's desk, the longer it takes for the engineers and designers and everybody to get to work and get it done and put people back to work in this state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Anfang. Senator Day.
I thought, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know how the roads are going into South Dakota, but I thought they were going there because of low taxes. But we've had... last summer, largest construction year in transportation ever. 2 years ago, the second largest. 3 years ago, the third largest. We're building stadiums. When I look at it, I mean, there's a downturn. There's no doubt. I mean, people are getting laid off. I don't disagree with that. But in the construction industry now for the last 2-3 years, I've heard everybody's talking about where there's no work. And I'm wondering, well, if there isn't any work in the largest construction year we've ever had in transportation and road projects, what was it like 5 years ago? Under Carlson, we didn't do anything for 8 years. You well know that, 1990, 1998. Then along come Ventura, and Ventura took the money out of transportation. We finally get a governor that, I don't know, he at least knows where rural Minnesota is. I know 494, 694, Highway 100, all across the state there's transportation. We rebuilt all of Rochester. And I look at it, and yet everybody can slam dunks the governor, so the governor isn't involved in this package. And I don't get it. I just don't get it. If everybody just thinks that, okay, we're all going to line up over here, we aren't going to include the governor, and then all of a sudden this is all going to be workable, I don't see it. But I'd like to know, if last year was the largest construction year you ever had, how can people say, okay, this year is going to be the lowest number? I even heard this morning, somebody say, well, this package will create 33,000 jobs. Well, so I quick wanted to call, so I called this company doing the jig, Flatiron, and asked them, well, how many people do you have working on a $400 million project? And it's like 350. So if we're going to get 33,000 jobs, they better not be bridge jobs. They better be some other type jobs, because we would need about 4,000 of those projects. So I don't mind putting together a great transportation package. I say we're starting out on the wrong foot because one of the major players isn't at the table. And I think everybody's going to say, okay, we're just going to drive this down this guy's throat and he's going to do all this. And I don't think it's going to work. But I'll be here 2 months from now and we'll start all over and we'll have another bill.
Senator Day,
people ask about... I mean, the deaths. The deaths are the lowest in 2006 we had since World War II. The safety problem in our highways has been absolutely great. We talk about people come and they tell me, they say, oh, we're going to have transit. We're at transit. We just spent $800 million on transit just a few years ago when we put our light rail project in. We would have had the finest, bus system in the world if we would have put $700 million into a bus system that could go close to homes, far away, routes, all over this. And so we're doing light rail. Now we're going to do it again. We're going to jam up the roads, and we're going to put light rail across St. Paul to Minneapolis. I'm here. I'm going to make sure I listen to everything, but I can't believe that everybody that's in the construction industry is down and out and down and out and down and out. I mean, man, there's car industry and the builders are, I mean, there's a lot of people out here. We're getting people laid off, and people are saying, well, we're laying people off, but that's no problem. You got money for taxes. You know, we can tax you some more. We don't have any, you know, you can get laid off, but, you know, ride the bus to go get your next job. But anyway.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day, are you done?
Yeah. Well, not for... Mr. Chairman, I'm done for, you know,
right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say it's tough to see the big picture when you're using such a small TV.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Anfang.
Very, very briefly. Senator Day, I respect what you say about your perception of the reality, but if it were legal, we in the building trades would be very, very happy to sit down and buy you breakfast. We'd still like to have breakfast with you, but we can't buy you breakfast. We'd like to do that. We'd like to bring some of the records that we have as hours worked and how they've declined over the years. I'd like to bring and have you meet with some of our business managers who can testify to the fact that we have had people on the bench all summer, this summer and last summer, that normally got off the bench and went to work, that didn't go to work at all this year. We'd like to do that. We're going to participate in the process, and I know this, that when you're out of a job, like many, many, many members of ours are, it's real. It's not balancing. It's not using numbers to justify this or justify that or to use to persuade this or persuade that. It's real. And I ask you to continue your good work and put some real people back to work on real jobs. Thank you.
Mr. Werke.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Senator Day, I would be remiss if I didn't stand up for my membership and point out a significant source of angst and heartburn that we have when those statements are used, that we have the largest construction program in the state's history. The way you get to that number is, I'm trying to be kind, is by double counting. And I'll use an example. The 212 project that is in its final stages of completion is roughly a $250 million project. It's a three-year project. It started in 2005 and will be completed at the end of this summer. And if you take that $250 million project and you look at how much money was actually spent in each year of those 3 years, there may have been $50 million the first year, $150 million the second year, and $100 million in the third year. And, or my numbers are right, I don't know if they add up. What happens in order to get you to the largest construction program each year is you count that full $250 million each of those 3 years. So in 2005, you count $250 million. In 2006, you count $250 million. In 2007, you count $250 million. That's what gets you to those numbers. And when you have several projects in your program that are multiple-year jobs and you double count those numbers, it is easy to say that you have the largest program. The other way that those numbers get manipulated is if you go back to 1985 or 87 or 86 and you look at the size of MnDOT's construction program and you add modestly 3% inflation to those numbers per year, that $300 or $400 million program in 1985 times 3% until we get to 2008 is far and away more than what we would ever have spent this year or last year.
And members, Mr. Werke brings up a good point about using some of the numbers that come from MnDOT, Senator Day. You really need to watch how some of those things are counted. You know, we had the same discussion when the snow plowing issue came, and now We're being told by the management people at MnDOT that they've been more successful than ever in removing snow from our roads. But then when we talk to our snowplow drivers, we find out why. It's because we used to count bare pavement standards from shoulder to shoulder. That way, if there's an accident and people need to get off the road, they've got a place to park instead of in 2 feet of snow. Then they changed it so that they only counted bare pavement from fog line to fog line. And now this year, they're basically counting bare wagon wheel ruts down the middle of the road. So, you know, you need to watch, as Mr. Werke pointed out, how you use some of the information coming from the management folks over at MnDOT, Senator Day. Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, I've been on this committee since 1990. People used to move to Cleveland and come back 23, 25 years later and laugh and say, you still got the same four-lane beltway you had around your city forever. In the last few years, we got Wakota Bridge going, we got light rail, we got North Star, we got 494, 694, 100. We've redone a whole bunch of roads out in greater Minnesota. All I'm saying, and I'll do everything I can to get more money in the pot, but I don't understand everybody telling us that this state is going to hell in a handbasket when it comes to transportation. Because I've been here, and it seems to me in the last 5 or 6 years, and the governor is disliked by everybody that's in construction, I know that, and I don't get it. That's all I'm doing. So I'm figuring, hey, I'll stick up for somebody. I've watched this whole thing, and we've lowering congestion down. And
Senator Day, once again, you should watch how you use the information that the managers at MnDOT have given you, because that, once again, was a number that was calculated differently. Let's put it that way.
My people that tell me are the guys that go fishing on 694 and 494 from Owatonna that get to the freeway out here, and they can finally see six lanes in Highway 100.
Mr.
Chairman.
Mr. Said. And take the Rochester construction improvement. Mm-hmm. The maintenance budget of the Rochester Transportation District will be paying off the debt service for roughly 15 years, mm-hmm. and not able to do the kind of maintenance that needs to be done. So we built a new road. Now we don't have the funds to maintain it. Mm-hmm. MnDOT has been playing around with statistics for a while. They did it last February in front of a committee. It's time we held them to task. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, when you show me the plow that does just wagon wheel ruts, then maybe the credibility of your last argument will be restored somewhat.
Senator Olson, they're now counting bare pavement where your wheel ruts are in the road.
I don't even know how you do that. Show me some evidence of that, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we can make that happen, Senator Olson. But first, let's go to Ms. Erickson, Ms. Finn, and Ms. Loverell.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson, I'm sorry. I saw you raise your hand earlier.
Well,
please.
As they're making their way up to the front, I'm not going to debate Senator Day, but I will say that we were both county commissioners, and one of the things, having been a county commissioner not too long ago, I saw where we met for a number of years with MnDOT on projects where they finally said, there's no sense on us meeting anymore because there's no money to do this project. And that was in a small city on Highway 8. But I have, in my district, there's long areas where they've been on the schedule to repave for years, yet now they keep getting bumped back and bumped back. We have bridges that need replacement in my area. And part of the problem is, just as Elliot addressed, that debt service money, maintenance dollars are now going to debt service. So great expansions, I will agree, have been done in the metropolitan area, but who's paying for it? I think we're all paying for it now because a lot of these projects aren't – normal road maintenance is not being done. We had some county-bonded paving this year in my district, and a contractor from Marty Seifert's district came all the way up to Chisago County to pave roads. You tell me those guys aren't hungry? Normally, that's the company down 5 miles from the project's doing that job. I mean, to come 150 miles to do a paving job, they're looking for work big time. And one last thing, I call on a lot of people that are in the construction industry as my customers. And so many of those companies have laid off crews, percentages, big percentages of their crews have not worked this past year because there's been no work for them. So I think anecdotally and with testimony here, we're hearing that it is pretty tough out there. There is a lot of shortage of, there's a lot of crews to do the work. There's just not the work for them to do.
Mm-hmm. Anybody in particular want to go first? Ms. Erickson, let's go with you first.
My name is Sarah Erickson. I work for Metro Cities, which represents 86 cities in the 7-county metropolitan area. First, we'd like to thank Chair Murphy for putting together a comprehensive funding bill. We'd also like to thank Senator Dibble, who is instrumental in putting together the working components of the Metro sales tax. The finance bill before the committee today is a bill of compromise and negotiations. My organization supports the different financing options in the bill. We have some questions about the local road improvement program, and we look forward to discussing that with members. Metro Cities also looks forward to working with the Transportation Committee to make Senate File 2551 become law. I'd like to thank the committee for its time.
Thank you. Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chairman and members, good afternoon. I do have a handout.
Okay, we'll get that passed out for you.
My name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and the League is a statewide association that represents all but a handful of Minnesota's 854 cities. I'm here today to express our support for this bill and to thank you for picking up right where you left off in 2007. What is being passed out now is the League's 2008 policy position. This was developed in a day-long workshop, and I should note that it was on a beautiful fall day at the Bloomington City Hall, and we had a room full of elected city officials and city engineers. What we heard and what you'll see reflected in this policy is that city officials see funding for roads, bridges, and transit as a priority. Transportation funding is a quality of life issue. Investments are critical to economic vitality and public safety. Further, adequate funding for state highways, county state aid highways, and municipal state aid is a critical component of property tax relief. We, in fact, are undertaking a survey right now to talk about the impact of transportation on property taxes. I won't spend time going through our position, but I would ask you to read it when you have a moment. You'll see that it calls for balanced, dedicated, and sustainable funding. This bill meets those criteria. Our policy also demonstrates that the League, like others, believes this represents a compromise. You'll see that the League supports a number of funding mechanisms that are not included in this bill. Nevertheless, our members recognize this as a solid proposal, and in fact, many city councils are already considering resolutions of support. Our hope is that this bill will become law, and we look forward to working with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Finn. Ms. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, I am not Carol Lovro and the committee. She graciously allowed me to slip in and round out the city perspective on this bill. So my name is Holly Thompson. I am the legislative associate with the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership. The partnership, as many of you know, is a group of 21 local governments and 55 local private businesses located along Highway 14 in the southern part of the state. Many of our partnership members have been here to testify before you in previous years, advocating for a safe four-lane highway from Rochester to New Ulm. As many of you know, U.S. Highway 14 in southern Minnesota is notoriously a very dangerous highway. Since the mid-1980s, over 140 people have died. 75% of those deaths from 2000 to 2005 were located on the two-lane portions of Highway 14. In a recent Mankato Free Press article, a Cortland City fireman was quoted as saying, "I am sick of pulling dead people out of ditches. If Highway 14 is one of the most dangerous in the state, why hasn't something been done yet?" We all know the answer to that question is lack of funding. The Highway 14 Partnership supports this bill because our members believe it brings us one step closer to a four-lane highway from Rochester to New Ulm, before the scheduled completion date of 2023 and possibly even beyond. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much. And do we have Mr. Hausladen, Mr. Tennyson, and Aaron Sexton?
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Tennyson. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm legislative counsel for the I-35W Solutions Alliance. The 35W Solutions Alliance was organized in 1989 by then Mayor Van McElroy of Burnsville and other political and civic leaders from member communities. Its members include Dakota County, Scott County, Hennepin County, and the cities of Lakeville, Burnsville, Savage, Bloomington, Richfield, and Minneapolis. I'd like to also acknowledge the members of the committee here who've been active in support of the 35W Solutions Alliance and frequently come to our board meetings, as Senators Carlson, Dahl, Larson, and Dibble. And I thank you for your support. 35W is a vital link in the highway system for the metropolitan area and the entire state. Before the bridge collapse on August 1st, over 200,000 vehicles a day, a business day, traveled I-35 as it passed Lake Street in Minneapolis. It is a vital link for Medtronic to ship its high-value products from Fridley plants to the airport for shipment to surgery centers around the world for next-day delivery. A missed connection because of traffic jams means that scheduled surgeries will be canceled because just-in-time delivery of products has failed to arrive in time to meet a scheduled air freight departure. The purpose and objective of the I-35W Solutions Alliance is to improve the flow of people and commerce in the 35W corridor. It has consistently supported efforts to improve transit and roads and have the ability to serve its objective and facilitate its purpose. For example, it has supported the Hiawatha LRT, BRT on 35W and Cedar Avenue, park and ride lots, improvements to Highway 169 from Scott County across the Minnesota River to I-494 in Bloomington, and of course improvements on I-35W itself, including the Crosstown Interchange projects. Many other improvements await reconstruction, such as the I-35W 494 interchange, which is not even scheduled for reconstruction yet. It was built in the 50s. At its January meeting, the I-35W Board Solutions Alliance Board affirmed its support for the following proposals. Most of the proposals are included in Senate File 2521. And although my board has not had a chance to review the bill introduced today, the issues that we have supported are included in the bill to a large extent. You also have the legislative agenda for the 35W Solutions Alliance in front of you. These provisions include an additional $1 billion a year in new revenues to meet the stated needs of MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council. It expressly supports the following tools to achieve the necessary revenues. Increase of the motor fuel user fee. And we say user fee because that's what it is. Some people call it a gas tax, but it's a user fee. Increase in the motor vehicle registration fee. A metropolitan area sales tax for transportation. We also supported the county wheelage tax without an offset. And we're disappointed to not see that here in this bill. We understand. A change in the CASAF formula allocating new monies as follows: 60% for needs and 40% for vehicle registration. And that's only on new monies. And extend the transit taxing district to the entire seven-county area, using the new revenues for transit stations and other capital requirements related to the added territory so they get something in return. And we also support prudent levels of bonding. The urban partnership agreement is a vital issue for our member communities, from Minneapolis to Lakeville and all the cities in between. Without new funding, the vital transportation needs of the metropolitan area and all of Minnesota will continue to fall behind other cities of the United States and the world. It is necessary to recognize that Minnesota's transportation system is on a downward slide from which we are counting on you to rescue us. Hopefully, we will not arrive at the tipping point where the negligent lack of investment has reached the state where our ability to compete in the global market is so bad that we cannot recover and that our state is permanently impaired. We are counting on the legislature and the governor to make Senate File 2521 the law, stem the deterioration of our vital infrastructure, and protect our economic future. Let us give our children and our grandchildren a legacy of which we can be proud and which gives them a bright future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tennyson. Mr. Hausladen.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm John Hausladen, president of the Minnesota Trucking Association, and it is a pleasure to be here today. I think today, as a committee, you have an opportunity, a rare opportunity, to establish a clear vision and a new bright line for the future funding of our transportation system. By adopting the anti-privatization and the anti-tolling provisions of this bill, which we do support, you can lay out a plan that says our existing general purpose lanes will remain free of tolls while at the same time allowing for creative financing for new capacity. And in short, you can send the clear message that citizens will not be forced to pay twice to use the same road. Now, why be concerned about these issues at all today? Well, as interstate businesses, trucking companies have a unique vantage point. Our members drive on every road in every state, and we actually pay every transportation tax that's out there. We are very familiar with them. And in our travels, our members are witnessing an alarming trend. As other states face funding shortfalls, they are increasingly turning to tolling and privatizing their existing roads. Why? Well, in exchange for upfront cash and long-term payments, state and local governments are turning over critical infrastructure to private investors. And the issue is already here with the advent of the Urban Partnership Agreement in this very bill. But let me be clear, in certain instances such as hot lanes and the elements in the proposed UPA, we believe that alternative financing may have a positive role. In those cases, these so-called pay-as-you-go systems are actually adding new capacity or managing existing capacity in ways that still allow commercial vehicles to use existing routes. However, for our existing road infrastructure, there are strong financial and equity arguments for prohibiting tolls and privatization. And you should have in front of you a document developed by the American Transportation Research Institute that goes into great detail and gives you a lot of the metrics and the math behind the calculations. But first, let's just talk about the drawbacks of tolling. Less money goes to the roadbed. The cost just to collect and administer the toll collections, that's just to collect it and run those tolls, in many states is between 20 and 40%. It typically only costs 2 to 3% to collect a state fuel tax. Also, toll increases have little accountability or transparency because these decisions are typically removed from the public debate. As a case and example, in 1995, a group of seven people in Ohio increased the Ohio Turnpike toll 82%, that's 82%, with no public debate, because that's the way the system was set up. Also, tolls are inequitable. Imagine a working father of four carpooling in a gas-efficient Ford Focus will pay the same toll as a single person driving a Hummer. And privatization is really no better. You should have in your pile an article about how investment firms are going out and making the pitch to states about this. Private investors have little accountability to the public. And when roads are privatized, tolls inevitably go up, and they go up quickly. The recently privatized Indiana Tollway is jumping from $4.65 to $8 per car. That was just privatized. And there's no guarantee that the money will go to roads. The Chicago Skyway lease payments are being spent to reduce city debt. Leasing and sales agreements typically include onerous non-compete clauses, limiting improvements on adjacent capacity to maximize the return to the investor. And at a length of 75 to 90 years, why are we even calling these leases? They're functionally sales. My grandchildren may not even see the benefit of these leases ending. And lastly, we simply cannot afford to have our road infrastructure which is critical to economic vitality and national security, in the hands of private firms whose motive is not public or national good, but private gain. By adopting this language prohibiting the tolling of existing roadways as part of this transportation funding bill, the state of Minnesota has the opportunity to set some clear vision for future funding. Doing so says that the traditional and cost-effective methods of collecting road funding, the fuel tax, registration fees, and sales tax on motor vehicles, will remain our key funding sources. But more importantly, adopting this language tells the public that we will not force citizens to pay twice for the same roads, and there's really no better time to address this issue than now. In closing, I'm sure some of you are wondering if the MTA supports this bill. The only problem we have right now with this bill is the indexing. Just like in privatization, indexing offers no accountability. However, our organization does have some ideas of how to craft a bill to address the financing of debt service, because we see this as important. So we do look forward to working with the committee to address our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hausladen. And I'm glad that you mentioned a few of the projects around the United States that have, like Mayor Daley, who decided to sell off public assets, or the governor of the state of Indiana. All I can say is President Eisenhower is probably rolling over in his grave. So, Senator Tennyson, Mr. Tennyson.
Oh, I'm sorry, testified. Thank you.
Oh, you already did? I'm
Mr.
sorry
Chair.
That I was out of the room.
I could repeat it, but it'd be more boring.
Oh, that's okay. I'll talk to you about it later.
So. Mr. Chair, down over here on the cheap seats.
Oh. Senator Olsen.
Thank you. Mr. Hausladen, you mentioned some other thing besides indexing. What are you thinking of?
Well, you know, clearly the biggest challenge we have with transportation funding today when you look at the citizens is there's a lack of confidence. There's a lack of confidence how it's collected, that it's used wisely, and that it's going where it needs to go. And the biggest problem with indexing is just that. It's indexed to something that isn't necessarily related to the road. It's on autopilot. And frankly, citizens are just not going to like that. But the bill already has a provision where we have an escalating fuel tax that is tied to the debt service on those bonds. And we think, frankly, just increasing that amount and tying that all the way through does really several things. First of all, we cap it at the max, so we know that there's a top end. Citizens like that. They know what they're getting. There's accountability because it goes directly for the roads that are being bonded, and it creates transparency because you see what you're getting in that process. And so we think, frankly, that if the indexing piece were removed and you enhanced that debt service piece as an escalator that floats and then has a cap to it, the public would get it. They would understand it.
Senator Saltzman, I'm...
You want to get through. That's okay.
No. Please, go ahead. Senator Saltzman.
Well, just very briefly, I'm disappointed to hear that about the indexing, because the people I hear from are business people who are sitting in traffic and burning gas at $3 a gallon. The indexing seems like a very reasonable way to project for the future and to have these funds so that we aren't coming back all the time and having to make this case, which has taken now about 20 years, you know, to do that. So I would just hope that this bill is really, you know, in my mind, addressing business and trying to make sure that we have the means going down in future years to be able to have the resources to keep our infrastructure strong. So I'm just disappointed to hear that. That's all. I think it's a very responsible way of addressing it.
Thank you.
That's my opinion.
And, Senator, just a response. We are actually running some numbers to show how our proposal would compare to indexing, and I think you'll find that it's a favorable comparison. So we're not just throwing that out without putting some thought behind it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Senator Saltzman, Mr. Hausladen, and I have had some discussions as well as Mr. Esteson with their association. And I think that, you know, any time that people who depend upon the roads to make their living are standing up and saying, we're willing to pay more, we need to pay attention to that. And whatever we can do, Mr. Hausladen, to bring the truckers along, we're willing to take a good, long, hard look. Thank you. And Ms. Sexton, have you given your presentation? I'm sorry, I'm kind of in and out here.
You weren't lucky enough to miss that, Mr. Chair.
I can leave. Ms. Sexton, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Erin Sexton. I'm the Director of Transportation Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Transportation is a critical issue for our membership, and our members are users of the system. They recognize that it's important for businesses to move freight and other goods efficiently and safely, and for employees to get to work in a timely and safe manner. They also recognize that these improvements come with a price, and they just want that price to be a reasonable one. For these reasons, we support a common sense and balanced transportation package containing a 5-cent gas tax, a 2.5-cent debt service surcharge, increased license tab fees, dedication of the MBES unleased vehicles for transportation, general obligation bonding for local bridges, dedicated funding for transit of up to $100 million per year until 2020, congestion pricing on new capacity and or HOB lanes to relieve congestion and increase highway safety, and we also would like to work to identify and help implement efficiencies within both MnDOT and the Met Council. And that's not a suggestion that they are operating completely poorly, are too fat, but there are things that I think we can bring as a business community to them, and maybe we can learn from each other and help move some of those forward. I think this package represents a significant movement from our position last session with the addition of the 2.5-cent debt service surcharge and the $100 million per year to advance transit projects. Based on today's economy, it is clearly a stretch proposal for many of our members, but we know that a lot of advocates will say that this isn't enough. We understand that this package will not solve all our transportation problems, and we are not suggesting it will, but it will help fix our roads and move some of our transit projects forward. It will demonstrate real progress for our public and increase their confidence that new investments in transportation will improve their lives. We do, I think, have a number of consistencies between our policy and the bill that I've quickly reviewed and we walked through today. But I do want to point out, I think, some differences that we do have. While we share your desire for increased funding for transportation, we strongly disagree with the inclusion of a half-cent sales tax. According to the Department of Revenue, businesses in Minnesota pay 45% of the sales tax, so this is a significant business tax increase for our members. And, I think if we are going to go down this road and do a sales tax, we'd like to see it at the lowest rate possible. And to be used for transit projects alone. In addition, we share some of the truckers' concerns regarding indexing. We do not support the indexing of our gas tax. We strongly believe that you as elected officials should vote on those tax increases and that we shouldn't be putting those on autopilot. And we have, I think, put forward the 2.5-cent debt service surcharge to help address some of the bonding piece. So I think the Chamber strongly does support additional investment in our transportation infrastructure, and we are hopeful that we can take that next step forward this session and actually have a bill that becomes law. I think following the passage of the MBEST amendment to make progress in meeting our transportation needs, it's important to take that next step forward in transportation funding. And this package does come with a price. And for some of our members, it's a significant price, but we also understand that we do need to make investments in our transportation infrastructure. And we urge you to pass a transportation bill that is common sense, balanced, and that keeps in mind the economy that we are dealing with today. So with that, I stand for any questions.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Sexton. Senator Langseth.
Mr. Chair, there are communities like Phoenix, Arizona, Denver, Colorado, Dallas, Texas, that have the half-cent sales tax. And as I understand, the business community was really out front on that and promoting it because they felt they were the biggest benefactors. And I'm wondering, why should the Minnesota – where would you come up with the money for what it's going to take to keep this metropolitan area moving if you don't have the half-cent sales tax?
I don't think we've taken the sales tax off the table. I think what we would suggest is a half-cent is too high. And we suggest if we are going to go down that road, it should be used for transit projects. And we would support a dedication of $100 million per year for transit projects in our state. So I don't think that precludes a sales tax. We'd, of course, love to see it found in other mechanisms, and we have laid some of those out in our policy. We appreciate the inclusion of the idea of the studying, the value capture. We think that could be a good mechanism to help fund the operations of some of these lines. We think we need to take another look at the fare box and recovery rate from those. We know we do a good job here in Minnesota, but for LRT, bus rapid transit, and some express bus, then it might make a little sense to revisit that. And in addition, I mean, if we do need those dollars to address our transit needs, we would just like to see it done at the lowest rate possible. And the number that we've identified is $100 million per year.
And Senator Langseth, did you have more? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sexton, it was just a qualifying question. So your $100 million a year for transit, you have not identified where that money would come from.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, some of the mechanisms we have suggested are a few that I just mentioned. The value capture, we are working to try and attach a better number to that. We would like to look at the fare increase piece. And additionally, if we do need to go down the road of using a sales tax to fund our transit projects to meet that $100 million, I would like to see it at the lowest rate possible. We would prefer to see it with a referendum. We appreciate that apparently there is a broader agreement on the governance structure, but we have an existing Met Council, so we were, I think, a little concerned about creating a new bureaucracy to look at how this money is distributed, so we'd prefer that the money go to the Met Council. And we'd like to see it sunset in 2020. And I think, not that we're naive to think that all taxes actually that have a sunset go away, but I think it does put in a mechanism that, you know, requires some reevaluation of is this the right amount? Is it working? Are we getting the benefits that we all hope to see from additional investment in transit projects?
Just to follow on, thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you done a calculation on what rate of sales tax, if you were to go the sales tax route to get to your proposed $100 million and what that would look like?
I think if you were to do the full amount for transit, I think with the latest projections I've seen on the sales tax, $100 million would be about a quarter cent. We think we can find some revenues in some of those other mechanisms I mentioned. But if you were to do it fully on the sales tax, it would be a quarter cent. And I know that's consistent with the 50% of the half cent that's dedicated. But you know, I think for at least our roads, we have traditional user fees that we are also looking at increasing here with a 5 cent gas tax, and that we are not interested in seeing the sales tax increase to be used for roads or this additional flexible piece.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Dibble, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Sexton, for your testimony. And I think it's important that we do acknowledge that the chamber has changed. And I think that's come about because a lot of their members have been very active and very vocal and very engaged, and appreciate the leadership coming from the business community. The fact that we're engaged in a more productive conversation than we have in the past. So I acknowledge that and appreciate it. And would also hope then that I appreciate your testimony. You're laying out your position as directed by your organization and kind of setting the stage here. But I do also hope that the chamber and the business folks who are listening recognize how much movement and how much compromise this bill contains from previous proposals. I think Ms. Sexton mentioned, we are looking at the value capture idea that's come from the chamber and the Citizens League. The UPA represents a significant step forward in some innovative ways of organizing how we do transportation and finance, and that might be replicable around the metropolitan area. There is a sunset aspect in the bill to the sales tax. It half of it sunsets in 2028, and so that's some recognition of those concerns. And the governance piece, I think, also has gotten some recognition, was the source of some very intense conversation not more than 24 hours ago. So I know that the Met Council is comfortable with where we're going on that as well. I'll just say that when we talk about whether or not this bill is too large or too expensive, I think it'd be very expensive to not act, and I would hope that the chamber would recognize the loss in economic activity and economic opportunity
If we don't try to achieve the goals set forth in the Met Council's transit plans and larger transportation plans, and you know, recognize that we have significant property tax relief contained in this bill, both in the money that we put towards roads as well as the money we put towards transit. That's a direct benefit to business as well. And the half cent certainly is not out of proportion with respect to how many taxes we levy on business, especially if you compare to other metropolitan areas. We're pretty low, and the half cent doesn't even get us up into the same neighborhood as the other metropolitan areas who are leaping ahead of us in terms of their economic activity and opportunity and productivity. So I think this is just a positive conversation and an exchange of views here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Dibble. And that was basically the point that I was going to make, Ms. Sexton. I see that the chamber is now warming up to the idea of some sort of sales tax for the metropolitan area for transportation services. And we wouldn't recommend a half cent if it – we could actually use a full cent in the metropolitan area. We all know that the majority of big-ticket items are in the seven-county metropolitan area. I mean, you know, from the front steps of the Capitol, you can see the Lafayette Bridge, and, you know, that's anything between $300 and $500 million. And then if you look at some of the other structures that are around the metropolitan area that are not state bridges, like the Lowry Street Bridge, you know, we could hear from somebody from Hennepin County to talk about their share of what that's going to cost. And, you know, local units of government can't afford to bear that burden any longer. I think that's, you know, a lot of the reason why we keep seeing our property taxes continue to creep up. You know, and the chamber also, and you're consistent and always mentioning the fare box. I just want people to know we have the highest fare box rates in the upper Midwest. Our fare boxes are already high. I don't believe that we need to pick on those people riding the bus anymore or those people that choose to use light rail. I think that there's probably other ways to get a little bit of money. Their rates are already as high as they're going to get. The other thing that I just might want to mention is that, you know, a lot of people have been kicking around, well, how come we're not going to have a vote on the Metropolitan Sales Tax Initiative? And, folks, we didn't have a public referendum on the Twins deal. We don't need one here. You just need to ask yourself what's more important, getting back and forth to work or the doctor's office or going to the Twins game. I would hope that we could do this and wrap it up in a hurry. Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, maybe the fare box isn't high. I don't know if it's high or too low or whatever. But keep in mind that we subsidize it $298 million every couple years. I mean, that's almost $300 million that we subsidize the people that are riding now. And if somebody says that that's too high, then in the bill what you have is we're going to subsidize. I don't even get it, but I guess if you have an old car and you're not making enough money or something, you drive cheaper than somebody that's going to work. I didn't even get that one, but it. I mean, the transit people somewhere along the line have to realize we're really putting a lot of money into transit, and there's like 4% of the people are in transit. And for years and years and years, Senator Lanxess and myself have been trying, like, the MVET. We could never get the MVET down. Never. Because people said we want to put it in health care and we want to put it in education. It took a vote of the people to finally get that. It's in transit, we put $700-800 million in one little line from Minneapolis to for people to, as I, to ride to the ball game. So somebody comes to me and says, by George, we got 4% of the people, and we're transit, and even though you give us $300 million more, we got to have more because we're going to go up a 0.5% in ridership, which I don't even believe the numbers that these people throw out. They don't even take tickets. I mean, it's you can ride around. And anyway, I get frustrated just listening, but I'll be fine by nightfall.
Well, thank you, Senator Day, and my response is just like it always has been. All of transportation is subsidized, whether you're talking about automobiles or freight trains or the trucking industry or the barge industry. It's all subsidized, Senator Day. It's just how much are we willing to pay? So with that, we'll have the next three. We're going to deviate just a little bit because we now have Commissioner Peterson is here, so we'd like to hear from Commissioner Peterson, Ms. Loveraux, and Mr. Tilley, if he has any words of wisdom for the committee. Well, Commissioner, it looks like you scared off the rest of them, so please, Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Myra Peterson. I'm Washington County Commissioner, and I'm the county commissioner from Washington County, and I also chair the AMC Transportation Policy Committee. And there has been a lot of discussion about compromise, and I would say that the AMC County Commissioner started working in 2005 to look for a compromise. And we based our compromise, and it was Republicans and it was Democrats and Independents, and we worked together to put together a compromise that we thought was based on actual needs. And there are many elements of this bill that represent that compromise, and I compliment you on that compromise. At first glance, we do have some concerns. We are addressing rural and metro needs, but we do have a few concerns about the wheelage tax. And I'm going to give you just a snapshot of what that means to Washington County. We're a growing county. It was 20 years, but it's less than that now. We are anticipating 60,000 more people. We have a waiting list of 43 intersections that need to be addressed. That's stoplights or stop signs or roundabouts, whatever you might want to look at, it's 43. We have the current wheelage tax of $5 does not even cover the maintenance of our roads in the county of Washington. We bond for all of our expansion projects. That is indeed property taxpayers. And when we talk about bridges, I'd like to take just a few minutes of your time. In 1988, the Metropolitan Council looked at my county, Washington, and said we needed to replace the Stillwater Bridge, the Hastings Bridge, the Wakota Bridge, and we also needed to look at the Swing Bridge in St. Paul Park. Since 1988, we have taken the Swing Bridge off of the market. It was too far gone. There was no way we could replace that bridge or even enhance it. We also started construction on the Wakota Bridge. It's not finished. The Hastings Bridge is scheduled for 2018, and the Stillwater Bridge, 2024. And a bridge that was to be $60 million is now scheduled to be $480 million. Those are the bridges of Washington County. And I come to you and I say, you know what? It's too long. It's too long, it's not safe, and we need to replace those bridges. And they're just the bridges of Washington County. Neither the AMC Board of Directors or the AMC Legislative Steering Committee has reviewed this particular bill, but it has elements, and I'm sure that our board meets this Friday, and we will review this particular proposal, and I'm sure that we can probably support it. We do have a little concern about the governance issue, but I'm sure that a compromise can be reached as we go forward on that. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to speak, and if you have questions, I'm here to stand for them.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Peterson, and to everyone in the room, Commissioner Peterson has been a strong ally, not only for transportation in the metropolitan region, but all across the state. And Commissioner, I just, as one of the good old boys, I just want to say thank you. Your organization, AMC, has done a lot to move this discussion forward, and we probably wouldn't be here today without your help. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, this may not be a fair question for Commissioner Peterson, but as I've been listening, and the claim made, and you know, I'm not challenging it, of the potential for property tax reduction as a result of increasing this kind of funding, and yet the concern about the wheelage tax. Now, the wheelage tax is something that you can, by constitution, can implement now, but reduce the property tax. And if you're not willing to use that different source of revenue in place of the property tax now, but only want it if it's additional, how can we assume that if we give additional revenue that is supposed to displace the property tax, that it will in fact do that rather than saying, oh, now we got more money to spend for something else?
Senator Olson, Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, we did institute the $5 wheelage tax. We have looked at it, and we did do what we had to do, but I can tell you it's not enough.
No, Mr. Chair, I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is that, you know, from a tax standpoint, our concern of relieving the property tax by replacing it with another tax. Now, I don't know if your wheelage tax, if you implemented it the way the Constitution has, that you had to reduce, and that's good. But if we're talking here about raising some funds and it will actually reduce the property tax, is that really true?
Yes,
because,
sir.
You know, we need more money, and essentially if it's now being used in property tax, that will end up going for something else. Is there any assurance of that? Because I think that is a growing need. A lot of people are really hurting by the unfair property tax. Mm-hmm. And that isn't just, you know, counties. It's everybody else. But we're looked to that we find a way to reduce property tax. And whether this is a vehicle to do it, I'd like to have a clearer reflection from the authors about how that will do that.
Well, from this author, Senator Olson, the only claim that I've made in regards to property tax, and Ms. Peterson or Commissioner Peterson can probably verify this, I'm sure that there's a couple townships in your county where 30 to 40% of their property taxes are going to fix up their town roads. Now, I know that's the way it is in Goodhue County, and I'm sure that Washington County's not that much different. I've never claimed that we were going to reduce property taxes with this bill.
Okay.
But what I am claiming is that if this bill is passed and enacted into law, in the foreseeable future, there should not be a property tax increase to pay for transportation services.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Senator Olson, I have to apologize. I do have charts from the city of Woodbury and Washington County that shows indeed the property tax participation in our transportation system. And it is fairly significant. The city of Woodbury has advanced the state of Minnesota money for for overpasses. They have, I want to say it's almost double their transportation budget goes for is property tax and not and nothing else. And I apologize. I will make certain that Senator Murphy receives those charts because it is fairly significant. We in Washington County have been very mindful of the constitutional responsibilities of instituting the wheelage tax. Mm-hmm. But $5 doesn't cut it. $10 would have done a better program for us and would have allowed us to start addressing the needs of our population growth.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on
Senator
that,
Olson.
I'm not trying to raise this issue in a badgering way, because I do have great concern about the property tax, and yet, part of it is the mechanism, but locally, I don't have any problem with locals. I don't call it subsidy. Everybody needs a road to get to their house or to get public safety to their house or have deliveries made to their house, whether they have a car or not. I mean, you still need access. And so how you share in that, I don't consider that a subsidy. Everybody needs this kind of access, and it's how we cover it, how we do it is – I think still the challenge, particularly at the local level. And I'm still trying to wrap my head around that as to whether we've got the right balance, whether it's through the distribution of our trust fund monies or how that goes on. So I'm still learning. And I'm still open to discussion and debate on the subject.
So am I, Senator Olson. I've been on this committee for 16 years now, and I can tell you what I know is just a drop in the bucket compared to, like, Ms. Berezovsky or some of the other folks out here. So,
Senator Murphy?
Yes, Commissioner.
Senator Olson, I would be happy to sit down with you and to bring you my charts and to show you just exactly the impact on our property taxpayer. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to say, Washington County is a very wealthy county, but in fact, we also have pockets of poverty. I have one community at 13.6 and one at 12.8 of the percent of poverty.
Oh, okay.
And many of those are senior citizens who are not using the roads, and probably I don't want them to drive, and I might want them to take transit to get around. Mm-hmm. So, but I am more than willing to sit down with you, Senator Olson, and share the information that I have from Washington County, and I believe it's representative of what's happening throughout the metropolitan area.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Olson and Commissioner. We have heard all the discussion about the interchanges and all the stuff that local governments are building and paying for. So I talked to my county engineer in Clearwater County this morning after the introduction of the bill, and in Clearwater County, when I was a county commissioner, our county level levy was $400,000, and today it's $1,060,000. So that's over doubling since 1998, and it's use of money that would or should have come from the gas tax through the CASA. It's much of it being spent on maintenance on CASA roads, and so it's a real impact on the property taxpayers across the state, not just for interchanges, but just for plain maintenance of roads that should be picked up by the gas tax that's dedicated to the CASA formula.
You know, Senator Olson, the other day I was at this meeting and was talking with some folks from the, that actually build roads. And, I said, everything has went up. And I think we had a chart here earlier from one of the folks that testified showing what the increased costs were. I think it was from Mr. Werke. And I said, in the metropolitan area, the mile of road costs about $3.1 million. And they started laughing. And I went, what's so funny? They go, it's well over four now. And they're not giving away concrete anymore. And we need to pony up. And hopefully at the end of the day you're one of those green votes up there on the board. So I don't think that we're asking too much here from the average family. I know that Representative Leader was just doing some back-of-the-cloth math earlier, and he was saying, you know, somebody that travels, you know, about 11,000 miles a year, that's $43.50 more that they would have to pay for the whole year. And, gosh, for, you know, $45, I think that that's kind of a bargain.
Senator Murphy, if I might.
Commissioner.
And Senator Olson, one little piece of information. I haven't been a county commissioner as long as you've been a state senator. But in 1993, when I was elected, the average price for an acre of farmland in Cottage Grove, the area I represent, was $1,500 an acre. Today, it is going for $175,000 an acre. So that
not for farmland.
For farmland, and that's without utilities. So
it's going for development.
That's the cost. That's a cost for transportation that we never talk about. But it is the right-of-way cost is escalating faster than what we can handle.
Mr. Tilley, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Barry Tilley, and I represent the Dakota County Board of Commissioners, and I will be brief. I will try not to repeat what Commissioner Peterson has said. While the Dakota, like Commissioner Peterson, the Dakota County Board has not seen this exact bill, but I am here to tell you that they support the basics of what's in this bill. We, like the other county representatives, were disappointed that the wheelage tax proposals from last year were left out. That is the one tax increase that my commissioners have heard from the citizens that they like, with the exception of the motor scooter people who...
we're trying to clean that up, Mr. Tilley. We're trying to get that cleaned up.
But the feedback the county board members have received is this is a tax that the county board can put on, and it all comes back to Dakota, and we'll see it in our roads, and they support that. Our county board supported the gas tax increase. They've supported trunk highway bonding. They've supported the metro sales tax, and they are very willing to step forward and take the heat for imposing that sales tax. They've said that over and over again. They did that back to help create the local government trust fund some years back, and that was less tasteful than this. They're anxious to do the metro sales tax. The business community they've heard from in Dakota County are supportive of that because they pay property taxes, and they've watched what the Dakota County Board has been forced to do to meet the safety and health issues of the people that move across the roads in Dakota County, and that is to levy property taxes to pay for transportation projects that should be paid for by users. Businesses like the other fixed-income residents of our county pay a lot in property taxes for fixed roads. With the businesses, if they're making money, they don't mind paying sales tax and stuff because it reflects the amount of business they're doing. When business is down, they still have to pay property taxes. It's the one good thing counties are real good at is collecting the property taxes that are due. When business is slow, they still have to pay the sales tax.
Tell me about it, Mr. Tilley.
They're not reflected by the business activity. Mm-hmm. And so our county board are hearing from the business community that while they don't like any taxes, if they would rather pay those taxes or mm-hmm. that are tied to their business activity.
Yeah.
So I won't repeat a bunch of the rest, but the Dakota County Board is mm-hmm. willing and ready to step forward and play whatever role, and we thank you for your consideration in this whole package.
Well, thank you, Mr. Tilley. And in regards to that half-cent sales tax and the way that we have it set up in the bill so that, the county commissioners would be the ones voting to impose that, like I said, it's much the same as what the deal that the Twins got. And I've heard from not only Dakota County and Commissioner Harris and Washington County with Commissioner Peterson here, but from several of the other counties. And they like this option, and they know that the money is going to be spent in the metropolitan area to help improve the road conditions here and the transit and the basically the livability in the metropolitan area. And I have not heard from one county commissioner in the metropolitan area that doesn't like this. That's of today. Now, I might get a call later on tonight, so I'll let you know. But Ms. Loveroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Carol Loveroe, and I'm the policy analyst that does the transportation policy for the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I want to echo what everyone else says. We thank you for this bill. At first glance, it looks like it contains the majority of elements that AMC has always supported in the past. The AMC board will be meeting on Friday to look at the bill in detail. And hopefully we can come forward with formal support. It's balanced. It addresses metro and rural highways and transit in a fair and balanced way. And we appreciate the work that you've done on this and are ready to work with you to make sure this bill becomes law.
Thank you, Ms. Loveroe. Thank you very much. We've got a couple other folks that want to get some testimony here. We have Mr. Van Haddam, Tuma, and Rob Vanosik. I know that we heard from Bob earlier. Now we're going to hear from the Vanosik side of the family that might be just a tad bit younger. So, Mr. Van Haddam, you want to kick us off here? So,
sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is David Van Haddam. I'm with Transit for Livable Communities. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan transit advocacy group with over 10,000 members in the metro area. And I'd like to state very strongly that we support this bill in very strong terms and appreciate your work on this bill. In honor of our 16th president's birthday, I would like to share what we believe are some comments that Abe Lincoln may have had about this bill. My name is Abraham Lincoln. I'm an old-fashioned Republican. Many, many years ago, I worked as a lawyer for the railroads, and I have been a longtime champion of transportation infrastructure, both railroads and canals. They, after all, are the foundation of commerce in this great country of ours. Just imagine where we would be without the prudent today, without that prudent investment nearly 200 years ago. Today in Minnesota, we need to invest similarly in better roads and transit to boost our economy, to attract employers, to attract footloose employees, and to protect our environment. I took the bus here today from Minneapolis, the 94 Express. It was a great way to get here conveniently, efficiently. And I even threw my bike on the front. That route alone takes thousands of cars out of traffic every single day. I'd heard, when I came to town, I heard that transit ridership is up in 2007, 10% in 1 year with essentially the same transit infrastructure. And by the way, 10% of that ridership was on the Hiawatha Light Rail Line, about 30,000 riders per day. Again, just imagine where we'd be if we expanded this system, as is proposed in this bill, so that all metro residents and all statewide residents had convenient, energy-efficient transit choices. Last fall, I was also in town, and the chair of the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce, which is actually the statewide chamber, Lane Beatty, came to town. And he shared with us what they had done in Salt Lake City, which is to increase the sales tax to fund roads and transit. We think that makes great sense in Minnesota and in the metro.
Enough of that.
We were just getting used to that.
Me too. I want to just shift briefly back to Mr. Van Haddam and wear that hat just for another couple of comments. Before beginning work at Transit for Livable Communities, I worked for 6 years with employers throughout the metro, both in downtown Minneapolis and along the 494 corridor. Promoting all of these options we're talking about, transit, light rail, carpooling, bicycling, et cetera. I can't speak for all of the employers, but I can speak for thousands of employees, and they are out there clamoring for more transportation choices. I heard the Minnesota Chamber, we heard today that the Minnesota Chamber recognizes the unmet need of $100 million per year for transit and that we need a dedicated funding source. We could not be in greater agreement with the Chamber and all of the broader business community. Where we part is on the funding source. We support what's in the bill, pay-as-you-go system, a smart system that saves us money in the long run. Again, good for the economy, good for the environment, good for a legacy that all Minnesotans can be proud of. I urge you to do the right thing. Vote yes on this bill. And one last comment from Honest Abe. Many of my cousins are also here today and will be gathering outside of the House Transportation Committee at 4 p.m. So thank you for your time.
Mr. Van Hattem, it's always entertaining. We just don't have enough of that in transportation. I mean, we're always talking about stuff that's either really boring or it jerks tears out of your eyes. So it's good to have one that's a little more upbeat. Senator Dibble.
No, Mr. Chair, I was just waving to the page here.
Oh. Mr. Tuma, you should have seen the look on your face when Mr. Van Hattem pulled his hat out. We got pictures. We'll send you some. So.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is John Tuma. I guess one little tidbit from history. Abraham Lincoln was our first president taken home to be buried by mass transit. So, a fact of life. And I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership and 47 of our member groups who support efficient, well-designed transportation system that protects our air and water quality, reduces global warming pollution, and gives Minnesotans many choices on how to get around. Minnesota Environmental Partnership member groups combined make up almost 500,000 Minnesotans who enjoy our great outdoors, want to protect it, and pass it on to our future generations. With 1.2 million people coming to Minnesota in the next 2 decades, the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, for the first time in its history, has made transportation choices one of our top priorities this session. In particular, Mr. Chairman, the passage of the half-cent metro sales tax dedicating a significant portion to transit choices, as it is in this bill. We thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your commitment and continued support for transit choices in this bill. The reason for our support is very simple. Transportation is a significant source of global warming pollution. 30% of our global warming emissions come right out of our tailpipes through the transportation sector. Increased transit choices are a critical part of reducing global warming pollution. Increasing transit options in the Twin Cities will reduce car travel by nearly a billion miles by 2020. That's using the Governor's Met Council's own estimates. This reduction in miles traveled translates into 39 million gallons of gas saved by 2020. That's 3 million gallons per year. At current gas prices, that means over $1 billion staying into the Minnesota economy rather than going to pay for foreign oil. And most importantly to the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, that translates into a reduction of 395,000 tons of global warming pollution. We appreciate the willingness of this legislature and the governor to pass a nation-leading global warming goal last year for reducing pollution that causes global warming. Goals are nice. I have a goal to run a marathon someday, but until I get out and run mile one, that goal is pretty much meaningless. You are at that opportunity to start making critical steps to reduce global warming pollution. And one of the most productive ways of doing that, of actually reducing global warming pollution, is to start making transit choices available to Minnesotans now. An efficient, well-designed transportation system that includes transit choices is probably one of the best ways of doing this. The governor's own task force on global warming indicated that to be a fact. It's time to act now. Therefore, the Minnesota Environmental Partnership and its nearly 500,000 Minnesotans that make up our member organizations are calling on this legislature to start taking their duty as stewards of our great outdoors seriously and to actually take the first step in reducing global warming pollution with this bill this year. In a big part, That can be accomplished by passing your bill, Mr. Chairman. We appreciate your dedication to doing this. Having dedicated smart transit investments is critical for reducing global warming pollution. This bill is good for our commuters, it's good for our economy, and most importantly to MEP, it's good for our great outdoors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tuma. And before I call on Senator Jungbauer, members and for the public, I'd made some statements earlier in the year saying that we were going to try to use this document to try to provide some relief for our environment. And unfortunately, one provision that we had talked about is not going to be in this bill, and it's not because we didn't try, Mr. Tuma. It's just because right now it's logistically impossible. And we wanted to have multi-fuel vehicles, hybrids, to have a discount on their license tabs. Unfortunately, we don't have what it takes right now in regards to technology at DVS to make that a reality. But when we do, and we've had a lot of discussions with DVS, they're more than willing to try to provide some of those so that we can incent families into buying vehicles that are multi-fuel and don't rely exclusively on gasoline. But we'll get there. So when we have our next bill that deals with that issue, Mr. Tuma, I hope that you come back and testify in support. One thing that I want to ask you about, you said 30% of all the emissions, or 30% of the global warming gas, greenhouse gases, I should say, is from transportation. Now, that's just automobiles, right? Because if we add in planes, trains, I think that number's higher, isn't it?
No, that's about what the estimate was from the Minnesota folks that worked on Minnesota's contribution to global warming. It comes from all of our transportation sectors across the board. A significant portion, by the way, one of the largest.
Oh, yeah, 30% is really high. But we're trying to help out by providing some things. But I think the best thing we can do right now, Mr. Tuma, is just like you said, and to continue to try to increase our ridership with Metro Transit and all the other transit lines we have. Senator Jungbauer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you reminded me of something else. I am the Senate author of a tax incentive for hybrid vehicles and alternative fuel vehicles, and I can't seem to get a hearing on that bill, so perhaps Mr. Tuma could help me. And since Mr. Tuma knows that I'm that advocate of, you know, reducing those global warming gases and stuff, I notice that this bill, and perhaps you can help me on Thursday, I think we'll have some amendments here, hopefully, for, I believe we need some complete streets and things. You know, being the guy that wants to reduce CO2, I want to ride my bike down here from my house, but it doesn't appear that I could probably make it alive based on the roads today. So I'm hoping that you're advocating, Mr. Tuma, that you'll help me advocate for complete street planning and some other alternatives that include bicycles and some things like that, you know, being the good environmentalist that I am.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Jungbauer, I think a portion of the money that is for some of these transit choices include those options, too. It's not just for light rail. It is including those kind of options.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Tuma, I didn't know on the urban partnership, there's some of those kinds of things included there. But I live out a little ways further where for the first few miles out of my house, there's not even a thing called a shoulder on the roads. You know, so it gets a little bit troubling in trying to use that alternative forms of transportation.
Mr. Vanasek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Rob Vanasek here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships. And the Association of Townships does support this bill. Town roads and bridges are an integral part of the state's transportation infrastructure. Dependable roads and bridges are critical to the safe and reliable system. In addition to moving agricultural and timber products to market, these roads and bridges provide transport to recreational areas, lakes, streams, trails, other components of our Minnesota's recreation tourism industry. The state's makeup of roads and bridges, we've got about 40% of the state of all the roads, lanes in the road miles in the state of Minnesota. On the state's MnDOT's priority bridge list, we have 512 bridges. That's just on the priority list. We have 695 deficient bridges, 512 on the priority deficiency list, and just to fix those 512 bridges, it would cost $90 million. So we strongly support the bridge bonding component in this bill. Transportation is a basic function of government, and for townships, it accounts for over half of our expenditures. And from 2000 to 2006, the amount we've been levying against our property taxpayers has doubled. And it's due to an increase in traffic volume, increase in the vehicle weight limits, increase in design safety standards, in replacement repair costs, and the fact that the gas tax, the last 2 years, up until this year, we've seen a decrease in the amount of money townships have been receiving from the state's, our portion of the state's gas tax collections. Minnesota Association of Townships has long supported an increase of a minimum of 7 cents in the gas tax. This bill is almost there, and it has a lot more pieces to the package than just a gas tax increase. And we support it because it is a package. Carol Monow told our group last year at our Legislative and Regulatory Committee hearing that it would take 34 cents increase in the gas tax to meet just what MnDOT has identified as the gap in infrastructure needs versus what we're spending. This takes care of Metro and allows the rural folks to get kind of what's ours. Last but not least, I'd like to thank the committee and for listening to my testimony. Thanks.
Thanks, Rob. Mr. Vanasek, I just need to ask if I heard this right, and it sounded like you said from 2006 to today, the property tax levy in the townships has doubled to?
From the year 2000 to the year 2006.
Okay.
Levied on property taxers, taxpayers in townships across the state has doubled.
Okay. I knew it went up, but I'm glad that we've got that straightened out. If it went up 50% or doubled in 2 years, flip out. But anyway, okay. Well, thank you. We've got a little bit of time left here. We've got Ms. Mullins from Isaiah and Mr. Ledger, I believe, from the Teamsters. Ms. Mullins.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for staying and listening to everybody who wants to contribute to this very important discussion. My name is Sarah Mullins, and I am with Isaiah. Isaiah is an interfaith coalition of over 90 congregations in Minneapolis, St. Paul, the area suburbs, and St. Cloud. We advocate for systemic change on issues of social justice. And I've been up in front of you guys before because we've been working on this problem for a while. But I'm here today because our whole purpose as an organization is to lift up the intentional building of our community and taking action so that everyone has an opportunity to share their talents and to participate fully in our society. Our involvement in advocating for dedicated, adequate funding for transit comes from acknowledging that everyone needs to get around. They need to get to work, to home, to school, to the doctor, to the store. And that includes people who are unable to drive. As such, transit is a must-have component of a transportation system that works for everyone. Our faith values also lift up a hopeful future and a stewardship through the sharing of our abundant resources. Everyone here today drove in or rode in or walked in on a road that was at some point planned, probably before you were even born. Someone was thinking ahead. Who are we thinking of in our future? This is our legacy. Every day, our action or our inaction shapes our legacy. And this is true both for us as individual actors and how we come together as a collective to take action for the people of the state of Minnesota. Isaiah agrees with many of the arguments made today about transportation as an economic engine in Minnesota, as creating jobs, and the increased cost to all of us of waiting to make this investment. And we support the compromise, the bill that is in front of us, Senate File 2521. And we support it because we believe that this actually is an important step to actively building our legacy, a legacy where a multimodal transportation system works for everyone who lives in Minnesota, provides safe roads, and builds a thriving transit system, not one that is just trying to make it through the service cuts and, you know, by fare hikes or service cuts becomes an ineffective way of transportation. This bill also addresses big holes in our system today, but it also looks forward and starts to prepare Minnesota for what we're going to look like in 30 or 40 or 50 years. And I think that the revenue that is generated in this bill is a very substantial investment that really creates infrastructure that we could say is a legacy and not debt service, which is what if we tried to do all the same things through bonding instead of building it as we go and preparing, that's debt service is all we would leave for our children. I was struck when I saw the paper today, the analogy of this bill as a jump start or a jumper cable. And I actually think that's a very appropriate image because when it's a cold Minnesota day and, say, I go outside after work and my coworker needs a jump start to their car, I can jump start their car without sacrificing my own. We both get home. And I think that's what we're doing today is we're jump starting our transportation system, and yet we're all going to keep moving along with it. We're just making a necessary infusion so that everybody can move forward. And I'll just say it again. I think we need to really think of this as our legacy in the same way that the people before us thought of us even before they knew who we were. So thank you for putting together this bill, and we support it full-heartedly.
Thank you, Ms. Mullins. Mr. Ledger.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Reese Ledger. I'm with Teamsters Local 120, the largest Teamster local in the state of Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today in support of this bill. I wanted to return very briefly to the jobs issue because this bill is about more than jobs in the construction industry. Although Teamsters Local 120 has several thousand members that supply construction projects with everything ranging from cements to bricks to block to lumber. Mm-hmm. This bill is also about jobs, the jobs of truck drivers and warehousemen, the people that use the roads, the bridges, and the highways every day, driving trucks or responsible for loading those trucks with everything from freight to food. And they rely on safe, reliable, and efficient roads, bridges, and highways in order to be able to do their jobs, in order for their employers to remain competitive. And we are confident that this bill addresses the issues of safety, reliability, and efficiency. Our members also count on the continued viability or validity of their commercial driver's licenses, which I'm not altogether clear as to whether or not this bill does address that issue, but it is something that does need to be addressed because it involves not only the livelihoods of our membership, but also the eligibility of the state for $20 million in highway funding. So we look forward to continuing to work on that, but wanted to thank you for your continued leadership in the transportation issue, and thank you for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Mr. Ledger and Ms. Mullins. you know, committee members, it's not very often when the Truckers Association, the Teamsters, and, you know, the plethora of folks that came to testify this are all on the same page. And it seems like the chamber is right on the precipice. So I think with just a little bit of work, we'll have a deal, and we'll all go home happy, and the governor will be able to sign a bill, and we'll build roads and put people to work and improve our environment here. So, and Mr. Ledger, in regards to the issue that you brought up about the licensing, we are working with DVS to make sure that those issues are addressed, and by the end of the session, we'll have it taken care of.
Outstanding. Okay. Thank you very much.
That's a guarantee. Senator Dibble.
And Mr. Chair, are we hearing a proposal or some thoughts about that next week, I think? Probably want to.
I have to turn to the crack staff.
I think I sent a note over on that earlier and thought I got an answer back.
Ms. Ball says Tuesday.
All right. So we'll invite Mr. Ledger back on Tuesday.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill, either for it or against it? Great. We're going to mark the bill up on Thursday, so if anybody has any brilliant ideas between now and then, get a hold of us, and we'll wedge them in the bill, hopefully. So thank you for your patience, and the committee is now adjourned.